Welcome to Sensational Information, an exploration of our senses and how we learn. This is Ann Cunningham, tactile artist and art teacher at the Colorado Center for the Blind. In preparation for my exhibition at the Woodson Art Museum in Wausau, Wisconsin, in December 2015, I'm talking to people about ways we can access information. Because if we can make information accessible, I think we should. Today, I'm talking to Pete Brown. He's a multisensory artist and creator of Piggyback App, an app designed to make art exhibits more accessible. If you would like to follow along as we talk about the features, you can download it for free onto your computer at piggyback-app.com. Click on the Download the App button or go to your App Store. It's available for iPhone or Android.
Pete Brown, creator of Piggyback App. I'm a tactile artist and created a mobile app and web platform called Piggyback. Ash Interactive is the company name, and Piggyback is the flagship product.
What I was hoping we could do today is I wanted to talk about your art and your motivation as much as, you know, Piggyback, because they seem to be intertwined.
Yeah, absolutely. So I started out as an elementary teacher in Michigan, relocated to Indianapolis about 10 years ago. And at that time, started working in arts administration for the Idle Jerk Museum, which is a Western and Native American art history and culture museum in Indianapolis. I started doing public programming and consulting for education there. And then I eventually moved into new media production and marketing, web, social media, those types of things. So had a pretty diverse experience there, and really got to learn a ton about kind of the way arts administration works from the inside. I had minored in art in college during my bachelor's, and was actually really interested in ceramics originally. And as soon as you graduate and all those free resources are gone, it just was gone. I couldn't afford a wheel or a kiln or clay or, you know, any of that. So I kind of got away from art as far as being an artist and creating for quite a while. And about 2 years into my time at the Idle Jerk, I met a Native American artist named Douglas Miles, who happens to be Apache, and he was doing a bunch of really interesting contemporary work that really caught my eye. And so in the museum's collection, we had several skateboards that he had painted on, and I kind of got really, like, excited about that. I'm like, wow, that's pretty cool, you know, because a lot of what, like, stereotypical things that you would assume that Native American artists are making, you know, that we had a lot of real traditional things in the collection, but the contemporary was something that I had never really put in my mind together, you know, before starting to work at the museum. So started learning about him and his style. And at that time I had developed an artist in residence program, and selfishly, but also in a really cool way, brought him out with some other artists. And so I began kind of meeting him and other artists he was with. He was really gracious in telling me about his style. I learned that his technique was all stencil-based. So he was drawing images and then taking an X-Acto knife and carving out these pieces and then layering them with spray paint. So that really triggered in me a sense of kind of renewal, in that it made me want to go learn how to do something new. So I got into stencils, just really a lot of pop culture is really just kind of my background. I'm a product of the 80s, born in the 70s, but a product of the 80s for sure. So anything pop culture is like a real fascination that I have with that. And I think a lot of Americans, like Gen X and millennials, we really identify, I think, with pop culture more than even our historic culture. And that's as a general American. And this is a tangent, but I was always really kind of jealous and fascinated with the Native American artists that I met that had a real strong tie to a cultural influence, because I felt like I didn't really have that. You know, my ancestors are traced back to, like, coming over from England, sort of, but there's really no, like, you're Irish or you're English or you're German. My family never really embraced that in a big way, so I feel like my culture that I've embraced is just American pop culture, you know? Yeah. So anyway, that's a little tangent about my art. But So I started doing art, and I kind of quickly started exhibiting, kind of on the down low. I didn't really want anybody to know about it because I was nervous about it, and had a good response, and things just kept rolling and rolling. So I've been doing that for, I think, 6 years now, just showing, selling, exhibiting, curating. I have a small gallery space in Indianapolis where I host shows, usually group shows, and they're more programmatic. They're more events-based. There's bands and DJs and food trucks and all that kind of stuff. In 2010, I got approached by an organization called Bosma Enterprises. They're an organization in Indianapolis that serves people who are visually impaired. They do rehabilitative service, job training, education, even general counseling and preparing families, for educating families. And so I had a neighbor who worked there and had been involved in donating artwork and things in the past. And so I was approached by one of their VPs about putting an art show together with their mission in mind. And that was in 2010. And in 2012, we debuted the exhibition, which was called Visualize Without Your Eyes. It was a profound experience for me artistically because I was creating artwork for people who normally are not, at least from my understanding at that time, who normally do not really venture into traditional arts environments, right? I mean, being a product of arts administration, I was very like, well, nobody's allowed to touch art. And, you know, you're not allowed to touch it. There's all these rules. It's kind of stuffy, you know, here and there. And that's the perception. And, you know, how am I going to create an exhibition in a really great gallery in Indianapolis? The Arts Council of Indianapolis runs this space called Gallery 924. So very traditional, very kind of, you know, I was really proud to be exhibiting there. But I went into that first meeting with them and I said, hey guys, we're going to let everybody touch all the art. How do you feel about that? And what was cool is that the gallery was really open to that. I mean, Shannon Linker is their director and she's always like willing to take a risk, which was really awesome. So it was, I don't know, awesome experience. I made 45 pieces for that show, ranging from 3x4 feet, pieces of, you know, Helen Keller that were larger than life, the Stevie Wonder piece, where he's playing, it was based off a really great black and white photo from the 70s, and kind of like our picture, our images right now, his hands are way up front in the foreground, and his head's back, so it looks small, and then I switched it out from a keyboard to him playing on iPad apps, so he's kind of back like this, and there's plexiglass iPads in the foreground. It was kind of cool. So, anyway, that kind of got me hooked on tactile art, you know. It made me rethink about how I can build my art, how I construct it, materials. I mean, I spent so much time trying to fake texture, trying to fake shadows, trying to, you know, fake all these things. And so while it was a big challenge to try to make art to be experienced by someone who couldn't see, it was also very freeing in a lot of ways because it was now like, well, if you want that to be soft, then go buy something soft and incorporate it. You know, if you want something to be feel like sandpaper, then go get some sandpaper and use it, you know. So it was cool. And I've never really been able to go back because I worked super flat. I mean, two-dimensional, like forever, you know. Very into street art, very inspired by graffiti and stencil artists and you know, and part of that comes from growing up in Detroit and being exposed to a lot of that for a long time and never really thought about moving three-dimensionally. So that was what really kicked it off. Then I met Anne and got invited to come out to the NFB conference in Orlando, got to show some work there and get feedback. And that was also, I mean, that was like the next step in like this transformational concept because when I did the exhibition, I hadn't met Anne. I was doing research on my own, looking for other artists that are making tactile artwork or touchable artwork, and couldn't find. I mean, it was impossible for me to find anybody even near me, and then let alone Anne. I remember it was like, oh my gosh. Actually, it was the gentleman's name.
Kevin Morley.
Yeah. They're having like a conference or something in Indy, and he invited me to come out. It didn't pan out, but he said, oh, you need to talk to Anne Cunningham, and so that was the introduction. There. And I was like, oh man, there's somebody else doing it. And then it turns out not only is there somebody doing it, but she's an awesome artist. She's been doing it for decades, and there are other people like me. It was like this weird, this weird like moment, you know? So, yeah, so the balls just kind of kept rolling. I mean, I really don't work totally flat anymore.
Well, you also don't work entirely visually or tactually. You also, you're a multimedia artist. You know?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. Yeah, for that show, we, you know, when I was thinking about how to make an exhibition accessible, it was, my first thought was touch, and my second thought was, well, it's got to have like an audio video component, you know, a descriptive component. So at that time, we were using QR codes, because QR codes were like kind of hot at that point. And they were free, which the price was right. So it was a lot of work, but I did every single piece in that show had a QR code. It had a video, descriptive video, not only describing the piece in a very literal sense, like, oh, this is in the lower right corner, and it's red, and it's made out of this, but also giving more insight into kind of the artistic, you know, here's why I chose these colors, here's why this person or thing was inspirational to make me want to paint about it. So that, yeah, was a big component in that first exhibition and, you know, has transitioned into today what is Piggyback. And I primarily designed it to be a self-guided multimedia tour tool. So thinking that a museum, oh, we have a special exhibition, let's interview the artist or the curator, let's have them talk about a bunch of pieces, and then when a visitor comes in, they download the app on their phone or their tablet, and then they, you know, hook up their earbuds and they go on a little tour that they don't need to wait for an expert, because the expert's in their phone, right? And that would also enliven a lot of these, the perception that the permanent galleries never change, you know? You could get more people re-exploring permanent gallery spaces by adding little tidbits and adding stories and things, right? That'll get people revisiting. So that was my original intent, but what we found is that people are using them for all kinds of different things. They're using them for, well, ticket sales. They can sell tickets, they can sell memberships, they can accept donations through the app. They can put all their general information up, so we're fully integrated with Google Maps to where if I was going to Denver for the weekend and I needed to know how to get to Museum X, I could open up Piggyback and touch on a button and it would give me turn-by-turn directions or bus route or walking directions, cycling, whatever.
Wow.
Yeah. And so another huge thing in museums is getting feedback from their visitors. So we're integrated as well with like SurveyMonkey. So you can create surveys. You can start collecting real-time data and feedback from the visitors while they're there. And you don't have to like, hey, can you take a survey, post up an intern by the exit, and beg everybody to fill out a piece of paper, you know? They'll do it on their phone because it's fun and it's right there and it's instant. They could even do it from home if they forgot to do it, you know? We have organizations, some festivals, in Indianapolis. The Indianapolis Irish Fest uses us. And we basically were turned into a digital version of their program. So instead of getting the paper programs, they're able to save on those expenses of printing all those color, beautiful brochures that end up in the trash or the recycling bin, and cut down and do about half as many, and then plan on all the younger people or people that are moving into the phone realm, you know, have it all on their phone. So you can go in and you can find out day by day what are the activities, what band is playing on what stage, how much does it cost to get in, when are the sheep herding demos, you know? And the same thing's true for Indian Market at the Eideljorg. The Eideljorg Museum used us for Indian Market. So a lot of festival and kind of programmatic applications are there as well. Let me think. We're getting into some web-based game development as well. We have a client that is Classical Music Indie. They're a classical music radio station. And they're using us for distance learning. They're really trying to get classical music heighten awareness in elementary students, so younger kids, getting them interested in classical music. So with my team and I have a arts admin and education background, so we're developing worksheets, characters, curriculum that will be used in elementary classrooms. And that applies to museums too, because you think about the fact that the Eideljorg Museum is in Indianapolis, but there might be a school in South Dakota that has an interest. You know, you can start to actually create curriculum and tie it in with the app. It becomes a marketing tool as well. I mean, like, so the last tactile exhibition we did, it was called Art on Music, and I'm keeping that up. It'll be up for a year, so people can still explore the artworks in that show and learn about the artists. But, I mean, we also offer, we have full analytics. So what I do, like, for our clients is I'll go into Google Analytics, I'll take all their data, and every month they get a report with how many people looked at it, where were they from, how long were they on certain pages, and that sort of information. And what's amazing is Art on Music, which was created by a guy in Indianapolis with, we had 19 artists, but 10 were probably, half were from Indianapolis, and the rest were from parts, you know, all around the U.S. Mm-hmm. Our number one hit wasn't even in Indianapolis. We were getting more hits from, like, Texas. One of our artists was from Texas. He's very good about promoting what he's doing, and people in Texas were responding. And so we were able to get all that those analytics. And so now you're going from, like, when you're thinking about your marketing money and you're thinking, well, I'm going to spend $1,500 on a billboard in my local market for a couple months, and that's $1,500 or $3,000 or whatever, you know, for the price of a billboard or the price of all the programs you're going to print, you can have Piggyback, which now is accessible worldwide. I mean, we've been hit on 5 different continents, 20 different countries, 35 different states. I mean, and that's all anybody with a phone, with a tablet, with a computer now, because we just released a web-based version. Anybody anywhere in the world with internet or a data plan can access its information. So, I mean, the reach is just nuts, you know?
So are you anticipating that you'll start promoting your own activities over Piggyback? I mean, like, for your next show?
Oh, absolutely.
Will you start promoting it on music, Arts on Music?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, my case is a little different, but in general, most organizations do. So, you know, so whether it's the Idlejorg or the Arts Council or Vanderbilt University, you know, when they have their next show coming up and you look at their Twitter feed or you look at Facebook or their website, they're saying, we're starting to release data on Piggyback, get a little preview of the show on Piggyback, you know, so people are starting to do that. And it's just going to automatically be part of your marketing concept.
So how can you distribute from here? You know, say, how would I as an artist be able to, you know, use Piggyback as my platform?
Mm-hmm.
How would that work? And then how would I distribute?
That's a good question. That's the way that it works is on Piggyback, when you get down to the what we call the stop level, meaning you're in front of something, you want to learn more about it, the little play button is actually twofold. It's either for video or a URL. Uh-huh. And what we normally encourage our clients to do is create a YouTube page. And actually, Vimeo is also a really great free service. And so we encourage people to use Vimeo or YouTube and then drop in the URLs. Because then again, what that does is it takes people back to your page, your content, all the videos you've uploaded. And then that'll track your number of views as well. But that's also where any other URL gets dropped in. So any website you want to plop in there, you could drop in your website. You could drop in, again, the SurveyMonkey link, the Google Maps link, the ticket sales link, the donation link, your Facebook, your Twitter, whatever you want. You can drop anything in there. So that button is really
so you could you can have a whole menu in each of those four categories.
Well, in each one of those buttons is only, you know, you can only put one chunk of content in there. So under the text, you can put one brick of text. The
We can't post numerous documents. It's got to all be in one document.
Only in the still images. And in the still images, you can have up to 5 still images that can be swiped through and zoomed out.
Okay.
Then the video, you can, you know, under the, again, that video or URL button,
yeah,
you can post one link, but that is kind of endless. There are different strategies for how you want to use it. You know, I mean, if you think, you know, that, again, a lot of these organizations will have a tour that is all about their history and their mission, and they'll have
a tour
that is all selling and buying tickets and memberships, and then they'll have tours that are exhibition tours, you know, multimedia, self-guided stuff.
Yep.
And so they're using them. They're basically bringing all these different corners of the museum together at one table.
Yeah.
And go, hey, we have this tool. How does marketing want to use it? How does curatorial want to use it? How about education? How does development want to use it?
Right.
And everybody can go, well, we want to sell through the store. Well, we want to sell memberships. Well, we want to promote our rental and banquet, you know, thing. So they can do all that through the one spot without having to go spend $30,000 or $40,000 to get a custom thing done or hire somebody to do it.
They get their piggyback app. They do a tour. And then PR can come in and say, okay, we're going to do, this is how our stop is going to look.
Right.
And then marketing can say, well, this is our stop. And then the art tour can, each image can get their own stop. I mean, you can make as many stops as you want, right?
Right. And maybe it's not even, you know, and another strategy is that just maybe marketing really doesn't care, but they do want to make sure the brand is consistent.
Yeah, sure, sure.
And so it's like, oh, we don't need a whole tour, but you got to make sure you use orange number 72 and you use blue number 11. You know what I mean? And we'll crop those photos for you the right way. And so it becomes just like, you know, when I was at the museum, we would sit down and we would go, okay, we're bringing in this exhibit. And people from all the different departments would go, well, here's what I need and here's what I need to contribute. And it would be the same thing. You know, piggyback would just become a part of that meeting where you go, okay, we've got the images, we've got the art, we know what's happening. Now, what are we putting on piggyback, you know? And and that's just the way I would envision it being built into the automatic discussion of the culture of the organization.
Right. Well, it sounds like it's already evolving.
Yeah.
And it's going to continue evolving, and it sounds like it's so flexible that each organization or individual is going to be able to decide how it works best for them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
That's the idea.
This is exciting.
And
so
one thing that I'm not going to mention unless I do it this second, because we were talking about the different areas of the organization.
Yeah.
But we also have built-in sponsorship recognition. Some organizations choose to use it, others don't. But when, for example, let's say that Hewlett-Packard sponsors Denver Art Museum's next exhibit, there's a spot in there where they can recognize that sponsor right away. And some choose to do that. So when you touch on the exhibit, there's a little slide that pops up and it's timed out for a couple seconds and it pulls back down and then you get all the content. And other organizations have you created a tour that is all about sponsors. And my last exhibition, the Art on Music exhibition, we had four main sponsors, and we just created a sponsor tour that had links, talked about the mission of each sponsor, dropped in a website. So, you know, I really tried to think about every job in that museum and what they're going to want out of something like this. And what that allows, again, from my perspective, is if you're able to recognize your sponsors right in here, then that's exponentially easier to approach a sponsor and say, hey, look, Anne's got this exhibition coming up, and she needs $1,500 to get this app going. So do you want to sponsor for $1,500, and we'll put your logo in front of every single person that opens up the app, you know, or that opens up that tour. And so it not only pays for itself, but if you play your cards right, you can actually use it to generate money. And from a museum perspective, again, so a museum has, let's say, 5 galleries, and let's say you have a $1,000 sponsorship for each show that comes in that year. So you just brought in $5,000, you know, and maybe piggyback cost you $3, you know, so you just made $2,000. And I don't know a single organization that can say no to making money, at least in this day and age. So I wanted to drop that in there because that is a concern. You know, how do we pay for it?
Well, it's a big thing,
stuff. And so I wanted to be intentional about making it accessible to allowing organizations to use it just as much as I want it to be accessible for someone to use it. You know, and that therefore piggybacks right into the concept of ADA accessibility, which the app is. It is coded properly to the point where if someone is totally blind and uses their iPhone or an Android phone as an accessibility tool, everything's coded where the buttons will tell you what buttons they are. It speaks to you. You can navigate through it. Actually, I was recently told that we were too descriptive at a meeting. So So we actually went back to Bosma Enterprises. One of their employees helped meet with our developers to make sure things were coded properly. And I went back and met with another group for them to possibly use it for some educational purposes. And one of the people trying it out who's blind said, you know, you almost overdid it because everything is so well described, it's kind of getting annoying. And
it sort of seems like you haven't found anything even close to the limits of what you've gotten yourself into.
Not yet. It's been just a crazy adventure. You know what I mean? I'm learning so much through this whole process. I mean, I resigned from the museum in 2012, and we launched Piggyback in April 2014. So really, we've only been going since April, and it's been kind of a very soft launch. It's been kind of, I really want to get a year of data, a year of kind of grassroots under my belt, and then really take a look at it in 2015 and go, all right, what's the next increment? You know, how do we go? And there's so much potential, so many different possibilities, and so I don't know. It's fun. It's an adventure.
It's great. You know, it's already evolved so much since we talked about it last summer.
It's crazy.
It's really great to catch up with you again.
Yeah. Thanks.
Thanks for joining us. Music is by Mike Jorgensen. You can sign up for updates at sensationalbooks.com.